You call the president an Indonesian Muslim turned welfare thug and a racist in chief. I mean, yeah. Is that the kind of...
That's the way he's behaving.
But in Obama's America, the white kids now get beat up with the black kids cheering, yay, right on, right on, right on, right on.
If you are a religious person, you don't want someone telling your child that it's okay to be gay. It's as simple right. as that.
I'm gay and I don't molest any children. What do you think?
Well, I say you're lying.
Right. You pray that I'll die tonight.
If you're a homosexual, I hope you get brain cancer.
You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. It took me about a year.
I like turtles.
Well, hello again, and welcome to Amron's group chat live over Pride48.com. And listeners will be glad to know that I have the recorder running and have since before we actually started this chat. So there isn't going to be any 20 minutes of lost episode this time. But joining me tonight for this group chat are, I guess that they're becoming my regular panel, Larry Dean and Stephen in Wisconsin.
How you doing?
And hey. Also joining us tonight is Larkin. Hello, Larkin.
Hello.
And a first-time joiner, or whatever you want to call it, to the live chat is Brother Sinatus. Welcome.
Have a good evening from snowy Colorado.
Well, this evening's topic, it's called What Agenda? And it was actually inspired a bit by something we were talking about towards the end of last week's episode. And essentially, the radical right goes on and on about the gay agenda. You know, we find that hilarious as GLBT people because we can't agree on what we should be trying to accomplish, let alone what our priorities should be. As far as I can see, an agenda, you know, it's not even as strong an action plan as a grocery list is. So what we seek is a simple objective, I think, to be treated as equal citizens. And there are many things that are needed to get there, like passage of ENDA, for example. But should we prioritize what we want and need to happen, or should we just go with the flow? And does it even matter what order things happen in? And does the visceral reaction of the far right mean that we can't come to a compromise with them, or should we just ignore them and focus on the folks in the middle? We can move the agenda faster, or do we need to let things just take their course over time? So this is the sort of stuff we're going to talk about tonight. And why don't we just start with sort of a broad thing and try to figure out, for starters, what the heck the gay agenda is. Anybody want to take a stab?
I'm still waiting for the manual.
Me too. It was supposed to come with your toaster oven, I think.
Yeah. Well, I don't have one of those two either, so.
let alone a flyer. We haven't even seen that yet.
I would say that there is some gauge. It's just to be treated equal, not to be discriminated. I mean, and all the different things potentially that the gay community might be going after all come down to that, does it not?
Oh, I think so.
You know, I mean, we're a very vast, very different group of people, and it's hard that whenever you get anybody like that together, to have them all agree on what we should be doing.
Yes, exactly. And that, from our perspective, that's part of the problem when we hear these people talking about the gay agenda, and we're thinking, what on earth are they on about? Because, as I was saying in the teaser, that we can't really agree on much of anything. Nevertheless... Well,
does the right have it easier? The religious right? Because they really have one mindset and one view.
No, that's a good point, actually.
Are they not predominantly white?
Well, certainly the vocal and political ones are. But, I mean, we see in Washington, D.C., for example, where the religious activists are primarily African-American. In other places, they may be Hispanic-American. In parts of California, they tend to be Eastern European. Although, I suppose
that's white.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point.
But of those people, that's a very small percent. And why do those the few minorities you pick speak out so vehemently? like within the black community, I know there is rampant homophobia. Why?
Well, that's probably true, which is ultimately a subject unto itself, I suppose, because there's also obviously racism in the white gay male community too, and I mean those are issues that are certainly worth addressing. But in terms of just the talking about this so-called gay agenda, I don't think that it's an issue of race so much as it's an issue of religion, personally, because you tend to find that they use the same general rhetoric and the same general religious stuff to talk about basically suppressing our humanity. I mean, some of the people you see out, let's say, oh, we just don't want gay marriage, that's all. It's just the word marriage we don't like. And then when alternatives are presented, they try to get that repealed as well, like in the state of Washington, for instance. So it's pretty clear to me that it's us in general that they don't like and that they want to try to stop.
I think the usage of the phrase gay agenda is used to try and implicate that we're up to something sneaky. Honestly, nobody talks about the black agenda or the Hispanic agenda or
the Christian,
agenda. even the religious right agenda. That's a term that's commonly thrown around to impugn our intention, whatever that might be. So,
back during the when the blacks were doing their stuff for their civil rights, what kind of terminology was used during that time?
That's taken me back a bit.
Because I'm not quite old enough to remember that. And then my hometown of 20,000 people was 99.99999% white. I think there was one black person in the whole town of 20,000.
Well, from what little I remember from that era, because I was quite young, a lot of the talk was not about African-Americans directly, as, there was no talk about the black agenda, or as they would have called it then, probably the Negro agenda even. They talked about the communist agenda. And
okay, that kind of fear factor.
Yeah, and they were trying to kind of lump it together, trying to imply that all African-American activists were radicals, like the Black Panthers or somebody like that.
So it's kind of the McCarthy era, kind
of. Yeah, it was a holdover, I'd say. Because by the late 60s, that was all had fallen by the wayside, partly because Richard Nixon had become discredited, and he and his administration were some of the cheerleaders of the subtly racist, more than overtly racist, rhetoric. But I don't think that we've seen quite as direct a parallel, anything that directly parallels what's happening with the radical right talking about the homosexual agenda or the gay agenda or what have you. Unless somebody else can think of one, I can't certainly think of one off the top of my head.
Do you think it potentially could be because we're essentially invisible? Not all of us, but a fairly large percent of us are invisible.
Well, I would say that there's some truth in that, yes. And it's got to do with his more the historic sense, because so very often gay and lesbian people would not come out. And that would mean that they'd be essentially living in the shadows, in a sense. And the radicals are still used to the old days, and they think that they can still operate the way things used to be. And I think that's one of the problems that they've run into, that they don't understand that the world has moved on. This whole fight over allowing, forcing them to comply with the law to reveal the donors to their causes, it's got to do with the fact that they suddenly realize we're fighting back. We're using the law that as it exists, or trying to force them to comply with the law as it exists. And they don't like that one little bit. Now, they make up all this stuff about how they're going to be intimidated and the subjects of violence and all that without ever showing any evidence of it, obviously. And it is, I think, symptomatic of the fact that they haven't quite worked out that the world has changed since they started out their hate campaigns. That we're not the cowering faggots in the public toilets anymore, that we're out everywhere and we're not going to put up with them.
Well, and using children as the shield, yeah. I don't want my children being taught by people like that. sort of behavior.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, that rhetoric that they do use still influences a whole lot of people.
Well, that it definitely plays to the middle, and that's a lesson that we should pay very close attention to.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that I brought up on Too Political, and it's in that book that I mentioned that Stephen has actually purchased, which is called Talking Right by Jeffrey Nunberg, or Nunberg, I don't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, he, among other things, he talks about the way the right wing uses language. And if you're at all familiar with George Lakoff, he talks about framing. Well, this isn't that. This is more taking apart what they say and how they say it. And a good example of that, and this is the one I've mentioned before, is the word Christian, how they have managed to essentially copyright the phrase so that Christian only means now evangelical or fundamentalist in some way. Even though, obviously, the word Christian doesn't really mean that at all. And by manipulating the language in this way, it allows them to kind of set the parameters of the debate. And they have become absolute experts at delivering their message in a way that goes right to the heart, literally speaking, of middle America. And they do it in other countries as well, but America is probably the best example. And so their message resonates in a way that it might not if they weren't so good at language and our side weren't so bad at it. In my opinion.
Well, and I'll just emphasize horribly bad at it.
Yeah. But then it comes back to what I was saying earlier is we're such a diverse group that I don't know if you'd ever get us to all agree.
Well, that you know, that's...
You know, even though we all essentially want the same thing in the end, we're willing to throw people who don't fit in our particular little group under the bus, like the transgender people, or, you know what I mean? You see that frequently. Say, oh, we'll pick them up later.
Yes, that's true. And this is nothing new. When I was an activist in Chicago in the 80s and early 90s, there was the same issues. That has not changed. And I mean, at that time, I used to say to people, you know, we're an oppressed minority. You've got no business oppressing anybody else. But that, of course, didn't carry any weight. And you'd hear people who didn't like African Americans, or they didn't like transgender, or they didn't like Asian, or they didn't like whatever. And you know, that sort of thing hasn't changed. I see that Scotty the Little Aussie Battler has entered the chat room, and I'm just sending him a message. But, you know, a lot of this stuff still comes back down to these fundamentalist groups, some of which, unfortunately, are perhaps best known as being based in the state of Colorado, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Been there.
Yeah. I mean, what's that about? I mean, why there, of all places?
Tax laws. Well, no, I don't know.
The Colorado Springs has Cheyenne Mountain. And a lot, what's the Air Force, the Air Force Academy and an Army base, and there's a lot of very conservative people that retire there.
Okay. Because that's the, I always thought there had to be some tie-in with the Air Force Academy, but I never could figure out what specifically, although I've heard that the fundamentalists have gone to great pains to try to infiltrate both the Academy and the Air Force generally.
Well, and last I knew, there were six fundamentalist Christian colleges in Colorado Springs and the surrounding area, too. So that's also part of it.
Mm. Well, even Denver's got his share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, some of the leading homophobes are or came from, anyway, Illinois. I always forget which one it is, if it's Matt Bam Bam Barber or Peter Porno Pete Libera. I forgot which one it was. But one of them was started in Illinois, apparently. I don't think Wisconsin's known for any noted homophobes, though, is it, Stephen?
Not that I can think of.
No, I think you all are too sensible.
Well, yeah. Right next door, Minnesota, where I'm originally from, they got some. They got their fair of batshit crazy people.
Yeah. Couple of
Michelle
losers.
Bachman.
Yeah.
You know, what's his name? Who just Norm Coleman?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But getting back to the agenda thing, is it? From our perspective, is there really any need to try to prioritize what happens? As in, like, a real agenda, for instance?
I would say no, just because everything we've gotten to date has been little steps, right?
So far.
And I don't see any reason why that's going to change. The only way that would change is if we got some kind of virus that killed off the 20% of the oldest population. That's the only way there'd be drastic changes today.
So you're saying basically that the homophobia is rooted, as it were, in the older
generations. Always. You know, I mean, as the old kids today don't care.
By and large, yeah.
Yes. I mean, no matter what, you're always, it's kind of like, you're always going to have your racists. You're always going to have your groups out there who hate some other group. That's never going to go away, no matter what. Even once we're fully realized in society and have all the same rights and privileges as everybody else, there's still going to be people out there going against us.
Or someone else will come along that becomes the new enemy.
No, because there's still people who are racists who, like that minister down in New Orleans who didn't want to marry the interracial couple.
Or Justice of the Peace, I think, actually.
Justice of the Peace, yeah, that's what.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are still people out there who are racist, even though I just don't ever see it going away, just because that's the way, unfortunately, the world is. Everybody has to pick some group to hate. For us, it's easy. It's the religious right, right? The Christianists. You know what I mean? We all have a group out there we hate.
Some of us in self-defense, I would say, but.
Oh, I understand, but it's not. Does that kind of?
Who's that?
I think that was my cat.
Oh, okay.
Does that kind of make sense what I'm saying? I mean, there's always going to be the haters out there. And I think no matter what, we're going to get there. Yeah. You know, the gay agenda being, if the gay agenda is equality, we will get there. I'm surprised we're as far as we are for how young the gay movement really is.
There's times I would definitely agree with that. I mean, I continue to be amazed that we've come as far as we have in my lifetime, but I still want more.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, one of my activist friends always used to say that what motivated him was a feeling of how dare they, basically, that when people would say that gay and lesbian people weren't entitled to have the job they were otherwise qualified for or a place to live or what have you, you know, how dare they do that? And that was what he was motivated by, you know, trying to overcome this, well, I suppose utilize actually this sense of indignation that he had for being treated as a second-class citizen. And we have made remarkable progress in a relatively short period of time, especially if you look from the Reagan years onwards, because really our progress on a national level, and a lot of people forget this, actually didn't start until Bush number one, when the Hate Crime Statistics Act was passed. That's really when our national progress began. Obviously, a lot of things were going on in the state and local levels before that, and still are. But that was the first big national thing that happened for gay and lesbian people. And we forget how relatively recent that was. I mean, we're talking about, 20 years, basically? That's not very long at all.
Nope.
Especially in contrast to earlier struggles.
Exactly.
Like, for the blacks in America, that literally was once slavery was abolished 100 years before significant progress was really made.
See, and I can't envision another 20 years that we don't have that you know, that it's not a big deal at all that you're gay and that we have all the same rights and privileges.
Well, that it's inevitable, you're saying.
Oh, yeah, and yeah. I think fairly soon. I mean, I don't think we're talking hundreds of years or 100 years. I think we're talking, you know, another 20 years.
And I would agree with that. I mean, the pace has picked up. And once you have states starting to fall in line, it generally tends to follow that the federal laws start to change.
Well, if that's the case, and this seems to be a kind of consensus that things do take time, that we can't really do a whole lot to rush it apart from our usual organizing and continuing to apply pressure and so on, does it then make any sense to be angry at President Obama personally for the fact that the agenda isn't moving faster?
I've got a solid opinion on that one. My opinion on that is that it's foolish of us to believe that anyone in the office of the president would have made significant change in a big blistering hurry. It just doesn't happen. No matter how much we wish for that, you know, I think we all have great hope that the next you know, major office holder will sort of save the day for us. And I don't want us to lose that hope either, but American politics plays to the middle. It always has, for those who are successful anyway. Mm. And when things tend to be too far either to the left or to the right, the pendulum always will swing again, but tends to land more in the middle. And just learning to play to that fact, I think it's fair to say, is probably the best lesson for all of us, activists or pacifists.
Either way. Well, Stephen, are you particularly disappointed with President Obama's performance on the agenda?
No. He's done some work on it so far. I'm sure he'll do more as long as we push him. He's only been in there for under a year, so he still has time to work on this. It's not like there are other things on other issues that he hasn't worked on either. I mean, he only has so much he can do at one point or at any one moment.
And also, you're also saying it's not like there's a time limit or anything either. It's not like it all has to be done in the first year either, eh?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, well, it'd be nice if it was all done in the first year, but that's unrealistic.
Well, I have a question.
Hmm?
I'm assuming he doesn't want to be a one-termer. Would it be political suicide for him to push too hard in this area right now?
That's possible. That's a good question. Never underestimate the fear factor. So.
True.
If he worked significantly on the quote-unquote gay agenda, that would be an easy ouster, I think, just considering how evenly divided the American populace is on Republican versus Democrat.
Brother Snatus, what would you say about that?
I don't think he's here anymore.
Oh, no? Oh, he dropped off.
No.
Oops.
We lost him a couple of minutes ago.
Oops, I didn't even notice. Well, I would say that I think you're all right. And I also think that Larkin raises an interesting point, too, because with the economy still not recovered and healthcare still not sorted and two wars going on, if he was to devote all of his attention to passing the gay agenda, I would think that there would be political repercussions both in 2010, but also more for him in 2012. Whereas if he concentrates on the things that affect the greatest number of people, like the economy and healthcare reform, that's not going to hurt him at the polls.
Well, and honestly, it pays to remember that laws are passed by the Congress, not by the president. And so I think we still suffer a little bit from the King syndrome. Dogs are barking. that we want to believe that the head of American government is the president, and he's just the head of one branch.
Yep.
Yeah, although Bush made that a very powerful branch of government, and I don't think that he's rescinded any of the power that Bush gave it, has he?
Well, some.
Yeah, some of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that Bush Cheney did that haven't been rescinded yet, or at least not rescinded fully, and then there are others that have been.
Cheney. Or we should just say Cheney.
Yeah, really. I always say Bush Cheney because I think it's silly to mention Bush because he didn't really do anything. It was all Cheney. But anyway,
yeah,
I've made that clear before. The thing is that I think that, well, anyway, about the things that he has undone. He's pledged to close Guantanamo. There's some details that have to be worked out about that. They are not doing the apparently not doing the illegal wiretaps anymore, but he hasn't rescinded the I don't know, power to do it or whatever. There's a few things. I mean, he has made, I think, unequivocally clear that the United States does not torture. And he is quite clear that waterboarding is torture, despite what Cheney would claim. So, I mean, those things are progress.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a bit more, but...
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah,
but doesn't really matter what he does, because the right is going to blast him about always doing this instead of this, and then when he starts doing that, then they go, oh, now he's doing this, and he's not devoting any time to that, and then he does that, and then they freak out again. They continuously beat him up over whatever he's doing, even though it's the thing they want him to do.
Well, but they're going to do that anyways, because, well, the people that are really doing that are, it's like Rush Limbaugh, who, no matter what happens, he makes his money off of balking at it, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, who knows, personally, he probably doesn't even care in reality. Hopefully he knows what he's doing and he knows it's just a moneymaker for him. I don't know if that, I mean, hopefully, yeah, but maybe he is that big of a...
He's remained that, whether Republicans are in power or not in power. You know, so I think he's working that from both sides and probably won't change. There's plenty of bigoted people available to contribute to his sponsors and whatever, so listen to his show, whatever.
Not so much for Glenn Beck, though, apparently.
Yeah, well.
I've got to do something about this phone. It keeps sending me texts from Twitter.
You have to... I think if you text to... If you send a second something in the message stop to it again,
send
it
off.
Will stop that.
It will, if you send it off, it'll turn it off.
Okay.
So that you don't get any notifications from anybody.
Yeah, I went to the website and told it not to send any between midnight and midnight, but apparently it doesn't know when midnight is.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't. I don't know if they base it off their time or your time. I've tried to do that too, and it doesn't work. So I don't.
It's Pacific Daylight Time.
One of the only time zones that matters.
Yeah. Well, the one of the reasons why all this came up is because last time we were talking about the Hate Crimes Act specifically, that at that point had just been enacted, and we were talking about what we'd like to see passed and when and or more what in what order and those kinds of things, and it sort of got me to thinking about this larger topic about what it is that we want to see, and you know, does it matter when specifically, other than the sooner the better. It happens. But then I started thinking more and more about this gay agenda thing, and I still don't really understand what it is that the radical right means by that. the ads that they're running in places like Maine keep talking about how we're going to teach gay marriage. And I don't even know what that means. How do you teach gay marriage? I mean, I was never taught opposite marriage.
Does it? Yeah. Isn't it not just fear-mongering?
Well, I mean, it is, nothing. Yes.
It's exactly that's fear-mongering. What I would say.
Yeah.
And so they don't care. It doesn't have to make sense. It's kind of like a lot of these commercials today don't make sense anymore because they're pushing a brand. They're not, you know.
Right. It's a the opposite of a feel-good, but it's a scare you kind of a phrase. And it's very effective, you know, especially when they put the pictures of the kids up. You know, these people are trying to get to our children.
Yeah.
So, I mean, has this not been going on forever and ever?
Well,
it was, you know, I mean, it's one way that you, it's been a very effective tool in the past to control people.
That's right. True.
You know, at first it was communism, you know, and especially, I'd say it's been a very common tool to use since mass media has been around.
Well, it's certainly come into its own since the internet has come to be, that's for sure. But a lot of the things that the birthers or the deathers or the teabaggers say is very similar to what the, what are they called? John Birch Society used to say. The same sort of rhetoric, not necessarily the same issues. But I think one of the things that is different is that the radical right Christians in particular always would speak out against homosexuality and so on, but they didn't consider us to be any sort of political threat as they apparently do now. And I think that's the main thing that's changed, and it's changed since the 1980s because Ronald Reagan brought the fundamentalists into the Republican tent. I mean, they had always been there, obviously, but he is the one who brought them to the table in the tent. And things have been downhill since then, in my opinion. And Larry Dean just noticed that I said teabaggers. According to the chat room. I giggle every time I hear that word, I have to say.
So do I. So do I.
But this is a big aside, but when all that was going on, those Tea Party protests all over the country, David Schuster was substituting for Keith Olbermann on Countdown, and he was revealing how the lobbying firm of Dick Armey was behind the teabag protests. And he said, because if you're going to be doing simultaneous teabagging all over the country, you need a Dick Armey. So how on earth did they get away with saying that?
Good question.
But that was one of the funniest things I ever heard. I even had to put it in my blog. I thought it was so funny. Yeah.
Now, you think in this world today of all the availability they would have to people who they could run things across on how to name things beforehand?
Yeah, you think they would have at least Googled it or something.
Well, yeah. considering their expertise with the language in other ways, they've certainly come up with some lulus in the past several months.
Yeah, like M for M.
Yeah. 2M for M, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is even better.
Okay, it's going to land on the beginning of Big Fatty's show.
To what degree potentially they might have done it on purpose because it gets people talking.
Well, I have wondered that. Like the that Gathering Stormtroopers commercial that they did. I wonder if that wasn't deliberately done so badly to invite parodies which would call attention to their original commercial. I mean, one doesn't want to suspect conspiracies everywhere because then you start sounding like them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
However, you do have to wonder.
I would say 90% of it's pure stupidity and 10% is sheer genius.
It is amusing to see when some of the attempts backfire, however.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we get a good laugh anyway.
Well, I think all of the American media got a good chuckle out of teabagging.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was too rich to pass up.
Yeah, and it became the fodder of a lot of the shows. Although they're still using it, so obviously they don't care.
No, and there's two competing factions now of teabaggers.
The dirty teabaggers and the clean teabaggers.
There's two different contingents supported by different groups, and each one claims that they're the better of the...
Oh, which group is the double dippers?
I think it's Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow did a piece on it.
Yeah, she did.
Well, all of that does seem to suggest that if we could get our act together on language, we might get a bit further along in the battle.
Well, if teabagging was considered successful, I'm sure we could come up with a few juicy phrases.
How about big fatty bagging? Oh. Not safe around small children.
I don't think we want to go down that road.
I still think hip hip hooray for sodomy should be our motto.
I had a t-shirt that was given to me by some friends at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, and I think they used to sell them, and it said across the top in big letters sodomy, but it was with a dot between some of the letters so that it spelled out so do my, and it would be so do my friends, so do my family, so do I. And I thought that was hilarious.
Very good.
Oh, those were the days. We were just talking about t-shirts earlier today.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you one of my favorites. A friend of mine used to wear a t-shirt that had the word homosexual printed on it in about 6-point type, and people had to get so close to read it until they figured out what it said. And just recoiled in horror.
Yeah. I always wanted the t-shirt I used to see in Chicago, and this is probably the 80s, that said something like, Jesus, protect me from your followers.
Yeah.
Well, that t-shirt I always thought proved the point that there's no shout louder than a whisper.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think Nigel used to have one that said, it was like over the pocket, the shirt pocket, where it would be if it wasn't a t-shirt. It said, nosy little fucker, aren't you?
Gotta love that.
That's the number one item on the gay agenda. Funny t-shirts.
Yeah. I saw, it's been a while, but I saw a Yes on 8 bumper sticker today. And her license plate was I heart G-O-D-D-D. So I guess she couldn't spell, or someone already had God, so, and someone had God with 2 D's, so she had to have 3 D's, I don't know.
Maybe she stutters. God, yeah.
But, you know, again, it's... How can I... I've never met a person who was against gay people who didn't say, who didn't have their God involved in it.
Yes, I would agree.
By and large, mm-hmm. I would agree. Yeah.
No, I can honestly say I've never known anybody who's, you know, they always, and you ask them why, and the number one is always because God says you shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was just thinking about that last night when I was sort of mentally preparing for today's show. And I don't know anybody but religious, well, conservatively religious people who are anti-gay either. And although intellectually I can think of ways where somebody could be conservative but not religious and still opposed to gay rights because, for instance, they don't think that there should be any civil rights laws, theoretically. That kind of person could exist, and there probably are some. But the vast majority of people who are trying to keep us second-class citizens tend to be religious, as far as I can see. I'm personally not aware of a secular... I'm not personally aware of a secular anti-marriage equality activist. They're all religious. I can't think of a single one that isn't. Prominent, anyway.
you know, and so that means, you know, it comes down to a religion, you know. Unfortunately, religion always has to rear its ugly head. You know.
Yeah, and that actually gets back to the whole language thing again, because our side, and by our side in this case, I probably mean liberals in general, tend to talk about separation of church and state. How, you know, there's supposed to be this wall of separation, which isn't in the Constitution, but it's a, you know, a well-known American value that churches aren't supposed to get involved in civic affairs, or and the government isn't supposed to tell churches what to do. But what gets lost in that when we just go down that road is we cede the whole topic of religious freedom to the right, which I think is a mistake, because most of these issues are about religious freedom, just not the way they say it is. For instance, right. When they say that legalizing same-sex marriage is an infringement on their religious liberty, it's the exact opposite, because under the law as it is right now, the state is telling churches, you may not marry a homosexual couple. And that is denying the religious freedom of those churches that want to do that. The church has no business, the government has no business telling churches how to do their sacraments and whatnot. It's the equivalent of if government was to tell a Christian church who is and who is not really baptized. There is no difference in that sense. So marriage equality, ultimately, is all about religious freedom, because it's allowing churches to make up their own mind about who they will and will not marry. And yeah. It's about expanding freedom. It's not about taking it away from anybody.
But they see it as it's everybody, they're all going to be forced to marry gays, and that's not the case at all, because they get to choose who they want to marry anyways. They can say, hey, I don't want to marry that couple over there because they're not good enough. But
that message isn't very powerful.
Agreed.
Well, and you know. it's all about other people's religious freedoms, but not ours. So if our freedom is to not practice religion, or to follow a religion that's less ubiquitous, that doesn't fall under the conservative rights definitions anyway. That doesn't fall under religious freedom. They're the only ones entitled to religious freedom.
What happens in a few years when the Muslims and other fractions within the U.S. start to grow and they become more powerful as voters?
Well, again, it'll probably depend on what specifically they are, because there's no monolithic Muslim view any more than there's a monolithic Christian or Jewish view. There are factions within them all.
But there are, to some degree, within the Muslim thing, women are very much subservient.
That's only in conservative Muslim sects. In other Muslim sects, they're fully equal. It depends on which specific part you're talking about. Now, Shia, for example, is extremely conservative, as we know, because they dictate in Iran. But Sunnis are not nearly as conservative, and then there are others still that are even more liberal. Just like in Judaism, there's Reform, which is more liberal than conservative, which is more liberal than Orthodox. For instance, and then of course Christianity goes all over the place. So I think that it really depends on where the growth happens in which particular sections. And if the economy does pick up, we'll have less of a threat from fundamentalism, because fundamentalism always grows and gets stronger in bad economic times. It doesn't tend to do well when people are doing well financially, or if they don't feel under threat. So if the U.S. continues to do well economically and people aren't feeling oppressed because of some weird conditions going on, chances are that religion, although it may be growing in terms of people who say that they are religious, that doesn't necessarily mean that it will translate into religiously active people, I don't think. Yeah. There's no evidence to say that the growth in people calling themselves religious automatically leads to more fundamentalism, for instance.
Well, and I always wonder whether it's because I select my friends selectively, but I find that fewer and fewer people are religious than had been true in the past. But that's like I say, I wonder if I'm skimming that by choosing my friends a little differently.
Well, I find it interesting how finally it's okay to say you're an atheist.
That was
except
a long some trick.
Except on Fox News.
But, you know, I mean, because even all the religious people say, no, freedom of religion means you're free to choose whatever religion you want to, but you have to choose one.
Yes. Well, I just was on some right-wing website just recently. I don't even remember why. I was following links, I think. And they were talking about the whole business of the Establishment Clause in the Constitution and religious freedom and so on. And they were arguing that the U.S. was a Christian country because some states at the time that the Constitution was drafted had a religious requirement, a Christian requirement specifically, to hold office in those states. You know, they forgot the fact that all religious tests have since been outlawed. But and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, it shouldn't be surprising that they're picking and choosing from the Constitution and the other foundation documents, because they pick and choose in the Bible as well. So I mean, what's the difference?
Why would the laws of the U.S. be any different?
Exactly.
Including that whole disclosure of funding thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and it's something I said before, that they haven't come to grips with the modern world, and they haven't really come to understand that we're a real, we're standing our ground now. We're not going to just go running away. But I think too that what they're also learning is that the power of government comes down equally on all sides. I mean, our side has always had to reveal its donors for any particular campaign, and they used to publicize some of the donors to our sides of campaigns. And now we're suddenly finding out that they don't like it when the tables are turned. And I think that that's a bit like Jason and I have been talking about on Two Political Podcast, about how nowadays whatever the Republicans do now is okay. Let's put it this way, what they did in the past was okay. If the Democrats do the same thing now, it's suddenly not okay. And the things that they did that were not okay are now okay. It's just like they have no sense of consistency in their, I was going to say intellectual life, but I don't know that they have any intellectual life.
Well, I mean, you could say that's across the board for the Republicans, because, you know, they had no problem with habeas corpus being taken away at all.
Yes.
But if Barack Obama were to do such a thing, oh my God, the world would end.
Right.
And so they pick and choose, you know, I mean, this, so to me it's not real in the end, you know what I mean? They do all this stuff, but, you know, they just flip-flop, and I don't know where I'm going with that, my brains.
Well, but it's selective application of the rules, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But to some degree, are we not all guilty of that?
Well,
can we look inside
I think we managed to live through younger Bush's years with a little more panache than they're living through the Obama, hopefully, first term.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend to try not to what's the word I'm looking for? Not two-faced exactly, but I'm trying not to be willing to overlook things that Obama or the Democrats are doing that I criticize Bush and the Republicans for doing. It's just that so far there hasn't been much reason to do that. I mean, if you want me to call out Joe Lieberman, I'm more than happy to do that, because I think he's a fuckwit.
And I would join you in that.
Yes, and you're the only one among us who can actually do something about it.
Well, at least I'm proud to say that I did not vote for him.
Well, that's a good thing anyway, so it's not your fault.
I voted for the Democrat who ran in that race.
Yeah. On a recent countdown, Keith Olbermann was talking about the things that he criticizes the Obama administration for. And I think what he, in the context, was he was trying to say, look, it's not that that Obama and the Democrats get a free ride, because they don't. And, I mean, one could quibble over whether or not they're being as forceful as they should be or not. That's a whole nother discussion. But I think it's certainly true that if you look at the two premier liberal media programs, which would be Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow, they both take the Democrats to task for things that they're not doing. Like, for instance, being too accommodating to Joe Lieberman or to Olympia Snow or to Max Baucus or anything like that. You know, they call them out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, like I said before, the Democrats haven't done anything truly naughty yet, like the Republicans did constantly during the first 6 years of the Bush-Cheney regime.
Yeah.
But they had a mandate, you know, because Bush won by, he actually lost the popular vote, but...
but by he a had hair a mandate. Both, yeah, by a hair in both elections.
You know, to me, it's, I don't,
pardon me.
We all need to perceive the world, in order to live in this world, we all need to perceive it, you know, have our perceptions of how it works, correct? And I think that none of us, period, really see the world the way it really is. We always color it with our own personal views and biases.
Well, that's probably true.
And to me, part of it has to be that way. I mean, because would any of us want to live in a purely scientific world, you know, where everything was, you know, but... at the same time, we all should be much better at critical thinking.
Yes,
and questioning thinking, yes. Around us and question our own thoughts. It's like, well, why do I believe this? And what I believe is, you know, if you don't know why you believe something, you should question that, saying, well, where is that? Where did that belief come from? Regardless of whatever area of life it is.
In other words, we should all be self-aware of what our actions and our thoughts and our behaviors are. And that's great advice.
It's probably an inherently liberal perspective on things, though. It's like Daniel Brewer was talking about a long time ago on some podcast or other, I don't remember. But he said, he's talking about liberals and conservatives and Fox and so on. He said that... I'm paraphrasing, of course, that liberals would watch Fox News because they were inherently curious and they wanted to know what the other side was thinking and how they were coming to these absurd conclusions and all those kinds of things. And whereas the conservatives would watch Fox News and nothing else because they wanted to hear their views reflected back at them. They didn't want to be challenged. They didn't want to challenge themselves. They just wanted to be affirmed and reaffirmed. And I thought that was a very good point to make because... I just got a message from Daniel Brewer on Skype saying, how dare you paraphrase me?
Well, get yourself on, yeah. Online, mister.
Well, get your headset on and you can say what you're what you were saying.
No more paraphrasing.
Exactly. No, I forgot what I was saying. I forgot what Daniel was saying.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out why they believe what they believe versus they just want to have their beliefs confirmed.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, that gets at the whole thing about the being self-aware and also critiquing your own beliefs from time to time. It's something that the right tends not to do, partly because it very often comes from a place of moral and religious certitude that they believe what they believe because the Bible tells them so. Or rather, right. They believe the Bible tells them that.
That's dangerous to critique yourself.
Well, yeah. And that it would be dangerous.
No, it's like, oh my God, I might not really believe something I was taught my whole life.
Right, and that it's dangerous to even listen to conflicting opinions.
Well, then this comes back to me how gay people who, to me, the gay community is very creative because we all had to learn along the way that society told us what we were was wrong.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, us older ones. And older ones. But we lived in a whole society that said, in order for you to come to terms with it yourself and be comfortable and live a happy life, you had to come to terms with saying society doesn't know what they're talking about.
Older ones, but not the wrinkly older ones like Laurie D.
Joining us now is Daniel Brewer, who can now speak for himself and not through paraphrasing.
So, and that creativity, and you would think gay people would be more willing to be open to more. And I don't understand where the log cabin Republican, those people, you know, are they still homophobic within themselves? Is that the problem?
Or just hopeful that someday the Republican Party won't be centered around the conservative Christian viewpoint.
Well, that's a big ask.
Yeah, that's a huge if.
Speechless. Yes.
Shut up, Big Daddy. Shut up.
Yeah, I'm just.
Have you been drinking? Have you been drinking liberally?
No, I have not. No, your paraphrasing was quasi accurate. I would just add.
Thank you for that.
I would just add to that I think what it is that a lot of low information voters have allowed politics to be related, at least in their own minds, as sports. So it really doesn't matter what the issues are or what the minutiae of things are or whether or not it ultimately benefits them or not, that's their team. And just like they're good fans to whatever their local sporting team is or their college football team or whatever, you know, they are Republican. It has become an identity in kind of a sports metaphor in their own mind. So it really doesn't, they never stop to think about what it is that may help them or hurt them personally. It is more of a case of they have forged their identity with this in such a way that it's only important that they win.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, and that's why they would not listen to liberal stuff or whatnot, because they have been told that that is the opposing team and that that is crap.
So, in a sense, Fox News is actually Fox Sports.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, there was just an article today in the Huffington Post, right? I mean, Fox News spent all day today talking about Acorn and never once mentioned that the GDP had risen. It's like, you know, it's whatever. I mean, it's they're just pushing their agenda.
Mm.
This is what the sports team says. So, yeah, that's my sports team, and that's who I'm rooting for.
I don't believe you. They're fair and balanced.
I might point out that Fox actually went to federal courts to have a ruling made that they are allowed to lie and still call themselves news. That there's actually a ruling from a federal court that says, yes, Fox News, you are allowed to lie. So, I mean, and they've never once disputed the fact that they lied. They just went to court to, you know, fight the fact that they had the right to lie. You know what I'm saying? It's like that whole Dan Rather thing. I'm going way off on a tangent here, but it's like the whole Dan Rather thing. No one has ever disputed the story that Bush's transcripts were forged. Nobody, you know, whatever the original story was, which has already escaped my head here, but, you know, the Bush story that Dan Rather was trying to break, no one has ever disputed the validity of the story. They've just gone after Dan Rather and got him fired because they found some planted document that was forged that does not take away from the credibility of the original story. So,
good point.
It's the same thing, right?
Go team, go.
Well, yeah.
It's the same thing. I mean, we have the right to lie. And we're not going to ever, you know, tell you that we lied, although we are constantly telling you that we're lying. But we're going to, I don't know, I got nothing.
Yeah.
Whose chair is squeaking?
That's my chair. I forgot.
How dare you? How dare you produce a podcast with a squeaky chair?
That was rolling around my heels because I couldn't.
He's trying to compete with the Godfather.
I reckon.
I'm going to write a citation on that. Issue you with a podcasting citation.
Citizens arrest.
Citizens podcasting etiquette arrest.
Yeah,
I feel like I've totally killed your conversation.
Well, that's okay.
We were just fumbling anyways. It's okay.
Yeah, it was sort of nearing the end of the hour, roughly, before editing.
Why? Well, I think some clever editing would probably fix... Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, you'll have to be in it, so... Okay. Well, as we wrap up, why don't we do what is tradition with these things and give you each a minute to plug something if you so wish. So why don't we start with our late arrival, Daniel Brewer.
Well, to paraphrase Arthur from the Aberrans podcast, he absolutely loves Dubious Intent, which can be found at dubiousintent.com.
Whose chair is that?
Squeaky chair. That was an homage.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say, this is not mine. Next, Larkin, what would you like to plug?
I have two things today. One's on Twitter, and it's Shit My Dad Says. And if you're not following it, you have to. Like this latest one, this is the tweet, nobody is that important. They eat shit and screw, just like you. Maybe not shit like you. You know, you got those stomach problems. I'm not a good reader. And the guy who does it, his name's Justin. He's a 29-year-old that lives with a 73-year-old dad. And these are things his dad actually says.
Oh, my God. That's you should so totally shit, do that Twitter reading podcast with Big Fat.
Yeah.
And then I just started listening to a new podcast a couple days ago, and it's called Reality Check. It's an Australian one. It's put out by Joy 94 point something. They do Cubby House and a couple other things. And it's, he does gay news, and then he goes into some, the skeptic side of stuff. Some of it's a little out there. I wish that he would stick to a little bit more mainstream stuff, but he does some good news, gay news from around the world. And it pisses you off after listening to it, all that happens around the world against gay people.
Yeah, well, I often get that just listening to Countdown and Rachel Maddow. But Stephen, what would you like to plug?
I've got nothing. I can't think of anything that was interesting to me recently. So, Larkin took mine. There we go.
You're paraphrasing Daniel, too. And Lurie Dean?
Tonight, I think I will plug The Triumph of Bullshit, which is at bullshit.tumblr, TUMBLR.com. It'll give you a laugh.
Oh, very good. I'm just writing that down so that I can put it in the show notes when I get around to it.
I'll post you a link.
Okay. Well, I still, of course, have no fancy schmancy sign-off for these things. But I'm still sort of working on it. When I say sort of, I mean not at all.
Somebody's playing right. The world of whatever.
I'm sorry, what?
Exactly.
Paint my face with your blood!
Oh, I've got some fires to put out, sorry.
On the world of whatever.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining me, well, this evening your time, this afternoon my time. And, of course, there'll be another group chat next week at the same bat time, same bat channel, pride48.com. And I will have a Two Political podcast early next week and also a normal Studio Aberrans podcast early next week. But that's it for today. Thanks for joining me, everybody. And I'm going to stop the stream now, but I'll chat with the boys for a couple minutes afterwards. Thanks for joining us, and I will talk to you all again next week.
Bye.
Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.